This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, we should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. I am so fired up for this twofer today. Two people for, well, there's no price of one, but it's a great episode.
Basically the price of one podcast.
Yes, exactly. Michael Ferreira, he's the Senior Vice President of Finance and Corporate Affairs at Anthem Properties. And then, of course, we have Jordan Carlson, who's the president of Anthem Holdings Canada and senior vice president of investment group for Anthem Properties at Large. Super excited to have both of these guys. Michael Ferrer has been on the program a number of times. This is our first time having Jordan on the show, so we're super excited. This is a great one. Strap in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to have both these guys in the same room, kind of just chatting and kind of bouncing ideas off each other. Real treat for me, for sure. Of course, Anthem's one of the largest and most reputable developers in Metro Vancouver. And I would say this is the first time having Jordan on the show. He doesn't pull any punches. And neither, for that matter, does Michael. So there's like a real good flow to this conversation and tons of takeaways. Of course, we asked him about the election. Of course, we asked him about policy at a federal level and what that impact will be on the Vancouver real estate market. And then just general market conditions and where we go from here. It was a great talk.
Yeah, it was super exciting having both these guys on the program. But before we get to that conversation, Matt, of course, this week we're sponsored by Scalina Real Estate, which is our real estate company. And this is the segment that remains nameless, trivia about Vancouver and Vancouver real estate.
That's right, Adam. So everybody's been talking a lot about immigration during the election and after. I came across and it was actually Mike Moffitt who talks a lot about the missing middle, but he had a graph that he produced, so I'll give him credit, about non-permanent residents. And no, there's a bit of a spoiler here, the growth of non-permanent residents in Canada over the decades and its impact on housing. So I just wanted to put this to you, Adam, and I'm going to give you four percentages. So this one's easier. I didn't want to leave you out in the cold. You can guess the percentage, okay? So how much, and we're going by decades, but just for this question, the decades are the last 10 years. So 2024, the last year of where we have the stats, to 2015, and then it's 2014 to 2005. And he goes back. We're just going to focus on the last two 10-year periods. How much did the number of non-permanent residents in Canada increase in the last decade? So that's 2015 to 2024, compared to the previous decade, 2005 to 2014. Okay, so what was the percentage increase of non-permanent residents in Canada? And I'm going to give you four percentage options. Okay?
Okay.
Are you ready for those?
I'm ready.
Well, everybody's ready, Adam. But maybe before I give you those options, let's talk about one of our fantastic listings currently live at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Oh, I love this listing. So 1702-9541 Erickson Drive, which is in Sullivan Heights, basically Lougheed Town Center. It's right there. This is super exciting. It is a one-bedroom, 757 square feet with parking and storage and renovated. So you get a renovated unit, but listen to what's been done in the building, Matt. So this is an 80s building, but it is concrete. It's been rain screened. It's been repiped. There's new windows, new balconies, parquet membrane, and an elevator modernization that they've gone through as well. So, I mean, this is really, I would call it worry-free building in such a great location. And it's right beside a $267 million community center that's currently being built. and across the street from Cameron Elementary. So what a great listing. And listen to this price, $467,999.
Wait a second, Adam. Say the square footage again.
757 square feet. So a large one bed.
757. An enormous one bed on the 17th floor in that thriving area of Berquitlam for $467,900. That's unbelievable.
Enough flowerful language. But yeah, no, it is actually a really great property and a great price. So perfect for first-time home buyers or investors that are looking for a condo in a developing area. But this is a great one. Now, Matt, back to the question. What are my options?
Well, before I give you the options, check it out at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com where all of our featured listings are. When you're there, click sell with us. You will be able to download the sold plan, our most downloaded document of all time. That it basically gets your property ready for market, gives you step-by-step instructions. Absolutely free. That's sell with us at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And Adam, back to our question. So what was the percentage increase of non-permanent residents in Canada in the last decade compared to the previous decade? Okay. Did non-permanent residents in Canada increase by A, 130%, B, 275%, C, 400%, or D, 516%?
That's a wow. I think honestly, I know it's increased dramatically, but I feel like some of those percentages have got to be higher than it's actually increased.
I will say he charts back, and this is Mike Moffitt. He charts it back from 1975, and over every decade, the number of non-permanent residents in Canada increases. Let's just put it that way. That's not giving anything away.
Decade to decade, I'm gonna go option A, 130%.
So from 2005 through 14, the number of non-permanent residents increased 130% in the ensuing decade from 2015 to 2024.
That's what I'm saying. I could be off, but I'm gonna stick. Final answer.
Adam, it was 516%.
Are you serious? Wow. So
in between 2005 and 2014, there was 358,394 non-permanent residents in Canada. The increase in the past decade was to 2,207,071. So I think Mike Moffitt's suggesting this had something to do with rental inflation and housing price increases over the past decade. In fact, over on LinkedIn where I saw this, there is quite a debate because not everyone agrees with them, but the number shocked me, over 500% increase.
Wow. Well, Matt, maybe I'm not surprised, but I'm guessing some listeners may have done better on that one than me. Wrong again for the, I think this is about the fourth or fifth week in a row.
You did, which was the one where you actually, that it was around 29.6 and you guessed 30%? I couldn't believe that. Oh. I can't remember what the question was. You're batting about 20% right now over the last 5 weeks. So kudos to you.
Sounds like my high school dating life. Anyways, without further ado, Michael Ferreira and Jordan Carlson.
Enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it is also making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
Adam, we want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Soane House, one of Marcon's latest communities that features a West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced, Nordic-inspired design for architecture that endures.
Soane House offers 165 junior one to three-bedroom homes in West Coquitlam, integrating nature into the built environment.
Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's marcon.ca/soenhaus. Or visit the display center at Outpost in Port Moody.
We also want to highlight 102 and Park. With billions already invested in Surrey City's central development over the last 15 years, the time is now to invest in its future, Surrey 3.0.
Introducing 102 and Park. A simple, straightforward skyscraper featuring 376 homes. Quite simply, this is a once-in-a-decade opportunity coming soon to Surrey's central downtown plaza. This is a time and the place to invest. Register at markon.ca/102andpark. That's markon.ca/102andpark.
Markon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Michael Ferreira, Senior Vice President of Finance at Anthem, and Jordan Carlson, President of Anthem Holdings Canada and Senior Vice President of Investment Group for Anthem Properties at Large. How are you both doing? That was a mouthful. Good to have you on the program.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Doing great. Nice to be back.
Can we maybe start, Jordan, we've never actually had you on the show before, so maybe if you could tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Yep. So I've been in the real estate business since 2010. I started right out of school at CBRE, working on the national investment team there. So a lot of really good experience getting exposed to, you know, transactions across all asset classes and sort of buyer types. So I did that for about 3.5 years, then came to Anthem. And at Anthem, I've been involved in a little bit of everything: leasing, asset management, acquisitions, finance. And sort of the evolution has taken me to today, which I oversee our acquisitions program. I work a lot with Michael kind of in the capital markets and raising equity for our different projects and initiatives. And then I oversee sort of the asset management income property platform at the company. So yeah, that's me.
And Michael, of course, past guest fan favorite, but we've had you on when you were at Anthem and also when you were at Urban Analytics. But for people who haven't heard you on the show, or need a refresher, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Was a co-owner of Urban Analytics for, well, I was with Urban Analytics for about 25 years. Myself and my former co-owner and good friend, John Vaness, sold the company in 2021. And I stayed for about 16 months afterwards. And then this opportunity to join this amazing company came up and I jumped at it. And so I'm with Anthem coming up onto about 2.5 years in another month or so. And so my role here is completely different from anything I was doing previously at Urban Analytics. So I manage our financial partner relationships. And as Jordan mentioned, we work together. There's a big group that, you know, we work on different things, but all sort of come together to raise capital, which is very much needed in this industry.
How have the last couple of years been? Have you, and like specifically in terms of raising capital, have you, because, well, really 2.5 years, Michael, you've been raising capital in presumably a fairly challenging environment since you got there.
Yeah, you know, my timing for these kinds of things is really good. When I was at Urban Analytics and we decided to jump into the Alberta market and expand, that was in 2013, a year before the oil slump hit, thinking, oh, it's Alberta, it'll bounce back quickly. Of course, it was 7 years later when it finally started to bounce back. And likewise here, when I joined here, it was just as interest rates were starting to ramp up. So definitely the first year was a huge learning curve for me, not having spent much time on the finance part of things, the industry. But I would say it's gotten better. It's still for sure challenging, but particularly with the, you know, the high net worth folks and family office groups that I tend to work more with, you know, they're looking for alternative avenues to put their money into and get their money to work for them. So, you know, they've got, you know, their capital into the equity markets, but they're also looking for alternative ways for their money to work for them and make some higher returns. And then, you know, I would say Jordan probably works more on the institutional side, so I'll let him comment on that.
Yes, it has been for sure a more challenging 2.5 years. You know, coming out of COVID was great. And then obviously we had inflation and the corresponding high interest rates. Not really, I think for institutions, it created a lot of uncertainty and fear. You know, we didn't know where the world was going. And so that makes it harder to make, you know, real estate investment decisions. But I think also, you know, a lot of their previous strategies that like they can't pivot too quickly and, you know, they're beholden to fund structures and things like that often. And so it created a lot of sort of dislocation and a lot of figuring out. So you know, it's just a lot of conversations, keeping tabs on where everyone's at, listening to them, trying to, you know, pivot, you know, the way you're doing things to maybe help them out and meet their needs a little bit. So I actually think, Michael, between sort of the high net worth group and the institution, we've done reasonably well. We've been able to bring a lot of cash in for our projects and different investments, but it's definitely been a grind. It's a lot more work to accomplish, probably less, but we're also learning a lot in the process because of it, you know? So
yeah,
that's the silver lining.
Does this?
I hope so.
Asking for a friend.
I think so. I mean, Michael, I don't know what you like. I would say there's probably more volatility in the world than there has been. And maybe that's not going anywhere. But, you know, in particular for real estate, just the combination of high interest rates and now, you know, we're actually feeling a lot better coming into this year. A lot of the groups we were talking to that maybe hadn't been able to deploy capital had it again and were ready. And then the Trump tariffs sort of made things harder. So I do think it'll get more stable and we'll kind of adjust to a new normal. To sound cliche, but so short answer, no. Yes, I think it's temporary, but it will never go back to being, you know, cheap money and there's just more cash than there is opportunity and that. Like, it doesn't feel in the cards anytime soon, but yeah.
It's just such an unprecedented time. And I you know, to Jordan's point, that sounds super cliche, but it really is. Like, I've never in my 30 plus years in the industry have never sort of experienced the, you know, it's just such a plethora of stuff that's going on right now that's coming at us that you just have to sit back and kind of chill for a sec to make sure you don't get too freaked out about everything that's going on out there. You know, we thought it was bad when it was the Ukraine war and now we have the Ukraine war and then we have Israel and Palestine and Hamas and now Trump and his tariffs and you know, the 51st state bullshit and that. So, you know, a new prime minister, it just seems to be a never ending barrage of stuff that's coming at you. And you just got to keep your head down and try to stay focused on what you're working on. And those are the conversations that I have with folks here is just, you know, looking at Anthem as a company, the projects that we're looking for capital for, do they make sense, you know, in any kind of market. And generally that's where we found success in raising that capital is having people focus on, you know, the company, the strength of the company and the strength of the project that we're raising money for.
Can we talk a little bit about kind of on the ground conditions? I guess one, in terms of what types of projects, I mean, Anthem has been busy, but what types of projects you've been launching, but also from your perspectives, you know, how the residential real estate market is going at this point at the start of May, I guess?
Yeah. So, you know, no secret that the pre-sale market is essentially non-existent right now. But that, I think, is temporary. I think there are a lot of people who love residential real estate, love investing in it. And I think right now they're just not seeing enough reason to get into the market, more obstacles than there are, you know, plums to encourage them to get into the market. So that's the one side, the pre-sale market. And I think, you know, hopefully municipalities and other levels of government recognize the challenges that part of the industry has today. And if they don't, we're going to be in a world of hurt in a few years when three, four years down the road, when we see none of the projects that were supposed to launch and start construction in 2025. Actually did launch and start construction. So we're going to have, you know, and it could even go beyond 2025, hopefully not, but it could. So, you know, hopefully they see the reasons for that and what impact, you know, what part they're playing in that. And, you know, together we can come to some solutions as to how to solve those issues. The other side of it is, you know, as I'm sure everybody's read stories on it, the unsold inventory that we have in the market. And, you know, yes, there is, you know, probably more today than I've seen, you know, to be honest, I can't remember the last time I've seen this much completed and unsold condo product coming onto the market. But at the same time, I think it's an immense opportunity for buyers who are frustrated when the market is super hot, super volatile. They can't get into a project. It sells out before they can get in. you know, now's the time where they can be going into a sales center. You know, prices have been adjusted down, I'm pretty sure, across the board. There are incentives being offered by developers that they would probably haven't seen for a couple of decades. And there's no urgency for them to buy right away. They can actually go in, take their time, make an informed decision, and buy the unit that they're looking for. Again, I think it's not a great market for us as developers and those trying to sell that product, but it's a fantastic opportunity for buyers out there, particularly end user buyers that are looking for a home.
That's a great answer. Yeah, sorry. So on the rental side, it's obviously not the same as the condo side, but you're seeing a few of the same dynamics insofar as, you know, we had a very tight market, rents were going up double digit percentage every year. It just felt like there was no end in sight. And then I think there's the kind of macroeconomic backdrop, but there's also just the idea that, you know, there's a perception that we are now maybe overbuilt temporarily, just because, you know, when it was so tight, lots of people were building and, you know, products coming online. And then there's been these curbs on immigration that I think that was a big engine and what was driving rents up. But so I think we're in for a period of, you know, we got to absorb some of this stock, and that'll be a little soft on sort of rental growth. I think it'll create a soft environment that way. That said, I think there's a lot of headlines out there that if you didn't really track the market or you weren't, you know, sophisticated about it, you know, you would think things were really bad. I see some headlines saying, you know, rents are coming off by 10% in Vancouver and stuff like that. And I don't think that's fair. It tells the whole story. You know, we're still at 2% vacancy. And so I think if you have a brand new building in an area where you're competing with three new buildings, it will feel soft because, you know, renters have choice and the developers play the incentive game, and, you know, tenants are savvy and they play them off each other. And so we might be in for a little bit of that. But again, I think buildings, particularly if you weren't shooting for top end of the market, you know, huge unit counts, you've got to absorb a lot of those really high rents. You know, that can be challenging. But we're seeing a lot of like a wood frame product, you know, in, you know, well-located places in the suburbs or even in the city. But, you know, the rents are high, but they're not crazy high. You know, I'm still seeing a lot of good demand for that. And, you know, we like to build rental to hold for the long term as well. And so I think temporarily it will be a bit soft, and it's not exactly what we'd hope for, but I don't think the sky is falling. So, you know, I retain some cautious optimism for sure.
I think what, you know, having seen this sort of movie over the years, not so much on purpose-built rental, but certainly on, you know, the condo market when we did have a lot of investors buying and buying for rental, you'd have these buildings that would complete and all of a sudden you'd see a bit of a softness in the rental market and what people could get for rents, because these buildings were closing, the owners just wanted to get them rented. So there was all of a sudden increased competition. And I'm sure I've hammered this before on one of the previous times I've been on, but, you know, the rental market is probably the clearest example in real estate of supply and demand, where, you know, you build a ton of rental and you release it and you're going to get an easing of rents and, you know, the rents are going to come down because you don't have that investment aspect to rental. You don't have investors coming in and pre-renting stuff and then re-renting it. The rental market just doesn't work that way. So we're in a bit of a state right now where we had a lot of new rental construction that was getting started, you know, even the last 2 to 3 years that is being completed now. And, you know, so we're going to see some softness in the market naturally. But given how difficult it is to get projects, rental projects to pencil, and, you know, we're experiencing that firsthand here, you know, that abundance of new rental supply is going to dry up, you know, unless, again, we see some policy changes that encourage the continuous supply of new rental coming into the market. So I think right now the softness that we're seeing in rents and rent escalation is going to be short-lived.
We've talked a lot on this show, like just recently, it seems like if you're operating in Kits, Fairview, Mount Pleasant, anything along the Broadway line, there is a sign on almost every, you know, 70s or 80s building, a redevelopment sign. And if you go on Shape Your City, it's like, you know, you can look on Kitty Corner across the street. There's almost a development, at least proposed, all along everywhere, right? And so I guess, do you actually see kind of shovels in the ground in the future for a lot of these projects? Or do you think we're going to see people pulling back on building market rental?
Well, I think that's a misconception that people have, specifically with the Broadway plan. People see all the product that's being proposed for the plan and think that it's all going to happen at once. And it's not. I can't remember who I heard on one of your previous episodes say that a lot of those applications that have been put in are landowners who are wanting to get in and you know, get the application in so that they can, you know, secure the height for their site. But in, you know, and Jordan can comment probably better on this, they really don't have any inclination or any expectation that they're going to be the ones who are going to develop it. They're just the current landowners. They're wanting to secure the zoning on the site and make sure they get the maximum height before a neighboring property would do that and block some of their prospective views. So it's, you know, and again, as I say, you know, these projects just aren't penciling right now with policies that we have in place. So I don't see, you know, much of any of these projects getting going in the near future.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I'm sure a few of them will, but no, I don't think there's going to be a glut of supply along Broadway all at once by any means, for all the reasons Michael mentioned.
I just wanted to go back to, you know, these higher levels of inventory and the softness in the rental market. How, I guess, and we started the conversation by talking about all sorts of uncertainty in the kind of around the world right now. But how long does it take for this inventory to be absorbed and us to get back to kind of more regular Vancouver levels? And I guess I mean that both on the pre-sale side, as you were talking about, Michael, and also in the rental market where, you know, we have all these completions, the pre-sale completions that launched back in 2021 are completing. What does it look like to get to have the absorption that we need to kind of get back to a normal kind of pace that we're used to?
I hope it'll happen really quick.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the $1 million question, right? I mean, there's all sorts of variables that are impacting the demand for that product right now. And combined, they add up to a whole lot of uncertainty in the market. And if there's anything that any market doesn't matter if it's real estate, you know, the mining sector, the energy sector, nobody likes uncertainty. And right now we just have way too much uncertainty going on around us. You know, at least we've got the election over with now. So that's one off the board. Hopefully we can move on from that. And hopefully, you know, that in and of itself will help create a bit more certainty when it comes to our dealings with the US, and we can start moving forward from that perspective. So, and then, you know, you've got the immigration reductions that the government brought in last year. If we can, you know, get back to, you know, some certainty on that and where we're going to be going with immigration and get some policies in place that will at least provide us some decent guidance moving forward on that, I think that would certainly help.
What are your thoughts, maybe Jordan, on the election? You know, Carney had the Build Baby Build platform. I think that in a lot of ways, there was a lot of similarity between the two platforms, but there was pretty significant differences as well. What are your thoughts on the election, and how do you see it impacting Vancouver housing?
It's a good question. So I think my thoughts generally on the election are, you know, I was ready for a change. I'm in the camp who go like, you know, I feel better about Carney than I did about Trudeau for all the obvious reasons. I just, to be candid, think he's a much smarter guy, and I prefer intelligence over not intelligence, regardless of your policy. but I think, you know, I'm nervous because it's still the Liberals, and they really were the architect of, you know, the lost decade and all this, you know, bad policy and the decline in productivity and, you know, the decline of investment into Canada, you know, like that worries me. With that said, Carney does have a track record. He knows, you know, again, what he's doing a little bit. And Polyev, you know, I like that it was a change. I like that it was a shakeup. I think he would have been really good for our business probably, but he hasn't been at that stage before. And you know, it's sometimes grass isn't always greener. So I, again, like very cautiously optimistic that this will at least be a net positive kind of going forward. In terms of housing, I mean, I don't have any, and again, I don't mean to sound jaded, but I don't have any faith in the whole, we'll build 500,000 homes. Like we've been there a million times with the federal government, with the provincial government. And, you know, as we all know in this business, it's a tough business. particularly these days with all the uncertainty and the volatility. You need to be very agile. You need to be able to solve problems quickly. So to do that, you need a lot of direct communication. You need a lot of conviction. And these are things that I think are a lot better handled by the private sector. I don't know, like the reason there hasn't been enough supply build isn't because the private sector wasn't up to the task. It was because there's a lot of really tough policy that sort of got in the way of making it happen. And so for the government now to go, okay, get out of the way, we're going to handle it, I don't think that'll happen. Yeah. So I don't even take it seriously. In my perfect view, they'll try and they'll eke out a few of their own projects and they'll realize they're not doing it fast enough. And so, you know, in a perfect world, they start incentivizing people like us to do it and, you know, create tax incentives and, you know, work on DCCs with, you know, the municipalities and the regions and all that stuff. And I think, you know, that would be good. So I do think it'll be better, but not without problems. That's my synopsis. Yeah.
And Michael, I think at least from the posts I've seen of yours on LinkedIn, I think you probably agree.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I full disclosure, I voted conservative and it was mostly based on, you know, like Jordan said, just time for a change. Having said that, you know, it wasn't without some trepidation in the sense that, you know, we've got in Polyev, you know, I think the biggest criticism of him was that he, you know, career politician, has not had the experience in the business world. So, you know, what does that mean in terms of executing some of the policies? And I'm sure had he won, that there likely would have been some turbulent times ahead. It, you know, while I was disappointed that the Conservatives didn't win, I'm, you know, like Jordan, I think we're in much better shape having Carney in charge than Trudeau, just the, you know, substance over style. And I think, you know, given that, you know, where the Liberal Party was in the polls before Carney became the leader and the fact that they actually came through and won the election, I think gives him a lot of leverage to implement some policies that might not be popular with the more socialist side in the party. So hopefully he can, you know, make a mark, take a stand on things that he needs to and move the country forward towards becoming productive again. And actually making use of some of the resources that we have and building our wealth again.
Okay, so maybe shifting gears just a little bit, rates.ca recently conducted a poll that showed that 30% of Canadians polled believed condos used to be a good investment, but they're not anymore. What are your thoughts on this poll and are they right?
What do I think about that? I mean, I get the answer. I get the rhetoric. I mean, like just for so long, like, especially when I was, you know, like I'm 36 and from the age of kind of 18 up till a couple of years ago, like it was sort of, you'd buy a pre-sale and you would make money, you know, and it certainly would help me get into the housing market. And so, you know, right now with the volatility and pricing kind of goes up and it goes down. And, but really again, it's headlines, right? If you're looking to buy a condo and every day you're seeing, and this isn't so much happening now, but certainly a couple of years ago, you know, the government taking action to reduce the price of that thing, you know, you're going to feel uncertainty and you're not going to be able to look through the noise. And so, you know, I understand why people feel that way. And, you know, I don't want to say it's, you know, no investment's rock solid. You never really know and all that. But I do think, you know, if you have the time, you can kind of look past all that and look at supply and demand. And, you know, I think long term, it probably is a good investment just because people will, you know, if we believe the policy, people will start moving back here and immigration will resume. And for all the reasons Michael was talking about, it's hard to develop. And I don't think there will be, you know, too much leftover supply. We need to chew through the current inventory. But yeah, I think so I don't agree. I think it is a good investment long term, but I think I understand if you're kind of just relying on headlines and you're, you know, how you feel about something, you know, I get that. The narrative has changed for sure. Michael, you probably have a more eloquent answer to that.
I don't know about eloquent. I totally get the results of the poll. I mean, you take any poll at any moment in time, it's going to reflect, you know, what's happening at that moment. So if you look at the headlines that people are reading today, you know, for Vancouver, it's, you know, the abundance of completed and unsold inventory of condos that's coming to market. you know, the only silver lining to the Vancouver condo, well, I shouldn't say the only one, but, you know, one of the big silver linings to the Vancouver condo market is that we're not Toronto.
Right.
You know, I think we're doing, you know, fabulously right now compared to the market in Toronto. So, and that being said, you know, Toronto's been there before and they bounced back and came through. So, you know, if you're looking at real estate as an investment and you see everything that's sort of been piled against investing in real estate over the past 10, 15 years, call it 10 years mostly, you know, all the government intervention on the demand side, the additional fees and taxes that you have to pay, the declarations that you have to make, you know, the tenancy laws being, you know, banked so heavily in favor of the tenants that it makes buying a condo unit, renting it out as an investment, or even a single family home and you know, as an investment, kind of a scary proposition when you hear these stories about how difficult it is to get a problem tenant out of your place. And so all of that is sort of, you know, piling on to and against investing in real estate. But, you know, I still think it's for a long-term investment, I don't think you can find a much better investment where you're going to put your money into something. And over time, even if it doesn't increase in value by very much, you're, you know, paying off any mortgage that you have on it. You end up with that equity in that property, which you can then take out and invest in other things, whether it's another property or other assets. And so for that reason, I think it's still a fantastic investment longer term.
Do you see a shift in generally the narrative or the approach to government? I'm just thinking in some ways, and I'm trying to think exactly when EB in Victoria sort of made an overture recently, I think it was January or February, that, you know, that investment in real estate's actually a good thing and we actually need it. And it was like, wait, what? You know, so yeah. But at the provincial level, you know, he's kind of pivoting a bit, obviously, and maybe in part, because of all the threats from the tariffs in the US, it seems like the Liberals, you know, shifted their entire platform to kind of mirror the Conservative platform in a lot of ways. Like, I guess this is a long way of saying, are we at kind of an inflection point here with policy and narrative around real estate investing?
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
You know, from chatting with our development folks at Anthem, it seems like there's certainly more receptiveness to, you know, listening to the challenges that we're going through and working with us on some of those challenges. It was at the Real Estate Forum a couple of weeks ago, and there was an excellent panel with Cyrus Nababy from Qualex, where he was talking even about on some of the rental projects that they're doing. You know, he says they're seeing flexibility from some staff municipalities that they haven't seen. Didn't think, frankly, they would ever see, given his experience. But that, you know, it seems like there's still not, like everyone within government, whether it's provincial or municipal, they're still not all on the same page about, you know, what needs to be done. So you might talk to one planner who's receptive to, you know, being a little more flexible and then gets moved to a different department and they're absolutely inflexible and then you're stuck. So it'd be, you know, my wish for, you know, whether it's Carney who does it and orders it, or it's Evie who does it for the province and municipally, that they conduct a full audit of all policies. And, you know, I don't care if they make it a public inquiry or something, because it's such a huge issue. And, you know, the housing affordability crisis has been ongoing. Like, I can't remember the last time we weren't talking about it, but let's at least figure out, like, and make it so that it's not biased one way or the other, because there just appears to be so much distrust between different levels of government and the industry. You know, even with EV coming out and, you know, making that comment about how we still need investment. And, you know, when they came out with those bills last year to, you know, try to speed up approvals, you know, they have conversations with the industry, but none of the policies they implement actually come from the industry. It's like they can't admit that the industry might be able to have a good idea on how to solve some of these issues. It you know, there just seems to be the sentiment that we're all self-serving, where at the end of the day, yes, of course we want to make money. That's why we're in business. But at the same time, you know, we're providing a service. We're building homes. We're building businesses. We're trying to keep the economy moving forward. So that's, you know, my wish for, you know, moving forward for government is that, you know, let's sit down, look at everything across the board. Everything's on the table, and let's get some independent people to come in and, you know, or people from both sides of the table that come in and can have a frank conversation about, you know, what we need to do to move forward.
Well, yeah, well said. I think you guys are right. And that, like, yeah, it's certainly, if I'm being, you know, honest and objective, better than it was. Like, we're getting a lot of approvals. Like, every week it feels like we're getting, you know, things approved on time, which is certainly a change. So that's good. To Michael's point, I mean, there's still a lot of brain damage involved. It doesn't go as fast as you want. But whereas before it was like, you just were like, oh, this is never getting approved. Like, there's just no will to get this done on the other side. And that's happening. And then, you know, the province seems to have worked out this Metrovan DCC kind of delay of implementation for a year. Hopefully it goes away altogether. But there are little, Eric would call them green shoots, our CEO. There's little green shoots like that. But to Michael's point, I mean, it's really hard for, like, it's a 180 from where they were. There's a lot of people on that side who probably haven't bought in, which is where you see maybe a misalignment in messaging and action at times. And there's an element of, like, it, you know, it's too early to say. Mm-hmm. Do you really, it's one thing to go out there and say, yeah, we've changed all that, but it's sort of like, you'll see, you'll believe it when you see it type of dynamic. But I think that helps. And then, you know, one other thing we're talking about, you had asked, you know, how does the condo market come back? I do think that kind of thing, if they see signaling from the government saying it is a good investment and we're helping it, you know, they're doing some good things with, like, you know, GST waivers up to $1.5 million and CMHC, you know, upping their coverage to $1.5 million, I believe. So, like, things like that should help. And then interest rates are coming down. I don't know the bond yields will go too much lower, absent any big economic shock, which comes with its own problem. But, you know, I have a buddy who got quoted from a major bank for, you know, a 5-year mortgage at, I think, 3.8% last week, which isn't as low as it was. It's not 2% or 1.9%.
It's not 6%.
But it's starting to get to a, exactly. You can start to, okay, maybe at least I can break even if I want to hold this long term. I rent it out. Like, so I'm seeing stuff like this, and I'm hoping that'll all culminate in a nice shift. But
what do you see as the biggest risk the market's facing right now?
Biggest risk? I mean, I would like to think we've sort of, like, all the risk is easily identifiable. That, like, the because the biggest risk is always the stuff you don't see coming. But I mean, I don't know. Like, I am very hopeful that the whole Trump tariff situation, that will all sort of normalize, and it's not going to be as big as it sounds. But that's obviously very hard to predict. But yeah, I think because we do have an unpredictable neighbor to the south, you know, that could be something. But yeah, I don't know, Mike, if you...
Yeah, I mean, I would just say just the continuation of the current certainty, right?
Yeah.
Is not getting some certainty back and some stabilization back in the market. And then, you know, you've always got in the back of your mind some of these, you know, big geopolitical things that are happening around the world, whether it's China, Taiwan, or, you know, escalation of Russia and Ukraine, Middle East, you know, that kind of thing that can just pop up, and all of a sudden it just freezes everybody for a bit again to see what's going to happen and what impact that's going to have on them. So I think just, you know, a lack of stability, you know, globally is probably our biggest risk.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible. This podcast is sponsored by Fenway by Caliber, bringing 209 new homes and 24,000 square feet of retail space to Willoughby Town Center.
And this retail component isn't just adding to the area, Adam. It's enhancing an already thriving community hub where neighbors connect over boutique shopping, great food, and everyday essentials. This is one of the final new construction opportunities to own in the heart of Langley's Willoughby Town Center.
And speaking of Langley, is it me or is Langley all you hear about these days? It's become such a powerhouse with over 7,000 businesses, the population set to double by 2040, and that SkyTrain extension arriving in 2029.
What's incredible about this location is that you're getting the best of everything. Your steps from the Langley Event Center, currently undergoing a massive $149 million expansion. The new Tennis Center and future Willoughby Community Center are right across the street. Plus, you've got the new Smith Athletic Park just down the road.
The location really is unbeatable, with 8 schools within walking distance and just minutes from Highway 1. And what I love is that this is a Caliber project.
They're Langley locals with decades of experience who really understand this community. They've partnered with Polyco Group to bring decades of development expertise to Fenway.
With Langley's population set to double and transit connectivity expanding, this is your chance to be part of BC's fastest growing community. Register at fenwayliving.com. That's FENWAY living.com.
Fenway, where small town heart meets urban sophistication.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown. And we're the founders of Oakland Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia.
Serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who happen to be licensed at Oakland, please reach out to us at oakland.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
It's interesting right now. Like, I just think the survive till 25 was the thing that everybody was saying over the last few years. And it seems like the biggest risk is just the elongation of like this current market, right? I mean, in a lot of ways, it's like if something doesn't change, right? I mean,
yeah. But you know, the wonder of humankind is our ability to adapt. So, you know, barring anything else sort of, you know, significant coming up, any other kind of black swan event or big geopolitical issue, you know, I think we'll adapt to what's going on and figure out a way to move forward, which, you know, I'm always optimistic about our ability to do that.
Is there, you know, just thinking about and I don't know if we've really had people like yourself on the show recently to talk about this, but with the tariffs kind of configured as they are currently, are there any kind of components or inputs to your projects where, you know, the costs have dramatically increased, or is it kind of business as usual at this point?
I don't want to sound glib, but I would say it's more business as usual than not on the direct costing side. You know, like I think our whole industry did the same analysis and we kind of looked at everything and thought, you know, construction costs could go up 3 to 6% as a result of all this. But we're not seeing that yet. And a lot of that's just diversification, you know, like you can pivot to where you're buying things from. And then the flip side of the coin is also that because there is more uncertainty, it's harder to capitalize things. There's actually less projects being built right now and starts are down. And so trades are more available and maybe a bit cheaper than they used to be. So short answer is right now, we're not seeing any impact beyond sort of the macro psychological, you know, what does this mean for me type stuff.
Yeah, just a couple of recent examples. We have a commercial shopping center in Southwest Calgary that we're going to get started on fairly soon. And, you know, asked our construction guys, you know, what impact the tariffs could have on that, given that it's, you know, commercial center will have more steel than it will, you know, concrete and such that a residential project would have. So, you know, they did sort of a deep dive into it and figured it would probably be about 5% would be the increase in cost as a result of the tariffs. We also have an office in Sacramento, California, where we're building a lot of single family homes down there and asked our team down there what impact the softwood, you know, duties might have. And for, you know, a typical single family home, they sort of did an analysis and figured it could be anywhere from $12,000 to $24,000, which is within the contingency that they usually build into budgets for those things. So not insignificant, but, you know, not a deal killer either.
You know, maybe changing gears a little bit, Anthem both bets on neighborhoods and kind of real estate trends and trends in the city, but also shapes neighborhoods with the scale of the projects you guys undertake. What areas are you most excited about right now? Like in Metro Vancouver?
I'm looking at Michael. Michael's more of the market guy on the res side. But I mean, North Van, city of North Van, the district and city are very different. But the city, just because it's a great place to live, really good government, you know, a lot going on. A lot of us live there, so there's some bias, sort of emotional sentiment. But city of North Van's great. Coquitlam, we've really enjoyed. You know, Burquitlam, a lot of supply there currently, but we've still had success there. And then Coquitlam City Center, you know, we have a rental wood frame project coming out, and we're actually really excited about that. You know, pockets of Surrey. We've got a townhouse project we're under construction on in Abbotsford that Michael raised all the capital for. That I think I really like stuff. It's like where people actually live, where they're forming families. I think there's still good demand there. And you know, a lot of those projects are, you know, wood frame in nature. And so a little less risks, quicker timelines, less contentious in the approvals process. So we're liking that kind of thing. But I don't know, Mike, what do you think?
Yeah. You know, obviously, you know, Burnaby being kind of center ice in Metro Vancouver, I think still has a lot going for it. Surrey City Center, you know, I like what's happening there. There's just, you know, again, if you're looking at an area where there's a lot of supply and a lot of supply coming up, it's not an area that you're going to, you know, invest in and think that your unit is going to go up a couple hundred dollars a foot a year kind of thing. It's, you know, a long-term investment that you're going to buy something there and hold it and let that community mature and come into its own. You know, I'm also going to give a plug, and I know this is going to maybe seem a little self-serving given that we've got a challenge project in downtown Vancouver, but I'm just, you know, flabbergasted that market isn't doing better than it is, given where values are. Because you're essentially able to buy, you know, newer condo product in downtown Vancouver for almost the same as what you could pay for in Metrotown. And, you know, and I know downtown is had some challenges safety wise and crime wise and such, but I think that's getting addressed now. And I can't believe that more people aren't reacting to the downtown market and sort of having a look at the value that's there, because I think it's phenomenal right now.
That's shocking. I agree.
Jordan, on the commercial side, what would you say are sort of the
areas? Well, I mean, that's on the commercial, so that's an interesting question. As far as commercial goes, I mean, in Metro Vancouver, our primary asset class of commercial would be retail. We have a little bit of office, a little bit of industrial, that's retail. And retail's been, honestly, it's been a great asset class over the last couple of years, frankly. It's been, like, I'm very glad we're in it. And it feels back in vogue. There's a lot of liquidity there. It's undersupplied. Rents are going up. So in Metro Vancouver, I mean, it's almost anywhere, just because a lot of the retail, we're not so much involved in fashion, we're more essentials based, but these types of tenants, they'll just go to wherever people are. So it doesn't really matter if it's Surrey, you know, Langley, Coquitlam, North Vancouver. You know, we're seeing the rents are all sort of coming out at the same, and they're higher than they've been. So I like all of it, so long as the product type is the right type and sort of caters to that QSR and everyday essentials type stuff. You know, for industrial, that market was on fire. It is now a bit softer. For all a lot of the same reasons as residential, frankly, just higher interest rates, uncertainty, big tenants aren't moving around as much, rents aren't going up as much, and so investors are uncertain as to where rents are going to go, and so it's created some dislocation in pricing. But I think Burnaby is great, pockets of Surrey, Campbell Heights, for instance, you know, a lot of growth out there. That's kind of where we're looking, if we're looking. But yeah, but generally it's less sort of bifurcated than in residential, just because businesses are more mobile and it's more just about where people are. But yeah.
I was at a dinner party on the weekend and somebody who's active in the industrial side of the market was saying that for the first time in as long as he can remember, he's seeing court-ordered sales of industrial properties in Metro Vancouver, which, you know, a couple of years ago you would have been shocked.
Yeah. Like, I think I don't know, like, you are seeing that, but I would think that's, I mean, again, like rates went from $10 to $25 in a matter of years. And so I think there's probably people buying a lot of properties where rents were in the mid teens or high teens and are going, you know, I'll crank these up to 25 and you get a bridge loan in there and then rents sort of flatline and you're not getting that growth. Like, you could get stuck. I could see that might be what's happening, but I'm not sure.
Okay, so we realize we've kept you for almost an hour here. What do you think the headline for 2025 is going to be?
Oh, we survived 25.
We survived. Yeah. Do you see, like, just on that note, you know, obviously Anthem seems in some ways, well, in all ways, but you seem very well positioned to kind of weather this storm and come out of it stronger and in a very healthy position. Like, are you seeing some of the competition, some of the newer players or smaller players? I guess maybe I'll frame it this way. What's your take on how other people are weathering the storm or surviving 25?
I think it's really challenging for everybody. Obviously, you know, it's for sure not quite as challenging perhaps for a company like Anthem, you know, which is diversified. You know, we're not just in residential real estate. We're not just in purpose-built rental. You know, we've got single family development in Alberta and Northern California and commercial and industrial that we're doing. So, you know, pretty well diversified that, you know, when one sector's maybe not doing great, and other sectors can come and pick up the slack. You know, and we also have the benefit of being, you know, a very strong, financially strong company. So, you know, if banks are looking for who they're going to lend money to, I think they'd be more inclined to lend to a company like Anthem than to a company who's maybe doing their third townhome project somewhere and is now seeking, you know, financing to all of a sudden do a big six-story wood frame rental project.
So ditto for equity too.
Right? Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So Michael, your headline was "We Survived 25." Jordan, do you have a headline?
Yeah.
A headline. it would be something like 2025, another tough year, got better in the second half. Like, I do really believe I do think there is a huge element of psychology in what's happening right now. And I've seen, you know, I haven't been around forever, but I've been around a little bit now, and the market can turn really quickly, kind of one way or the other, right? Like, I think, you know, in COVID, and there's not the same low interest rates and tons of capital on the sidelines that there was then. But, you know, there was like a couple of months where it was like, well, we have jobs. Will this business just like cease to exist? It felt very, very scary and uncertain. And all of a sudden, both on the residential, but commercial, like it literally felt like in a day, it was like, oh, you know, that office building just sold for a 3 cap or these guys just sold 100 units overnight. And then, you know, with bad news, that can go back. So I do think, like, well, it won't come back roaring. There's a lot of people on the sidelines. And if people just feel like, okay, like things aren't going to get worse, you know, you'll see people start buying again. And I do feel, you know, that's part of our this program we're about to talk about, like a lot of the rationale behind it and just sort of giving people that extra incentive to just get up and make that decision. And I'm hopeful that that'll happen in the back half of the year. But no, I think it's going to be another tougher year for sure. We could go with survive 25.
But getting better, I like it. I like the optimism.
Yeah.
And the other thing, just thinking out loud here, I mean, we used to talk about how real estate and the stock market, you know, they're very different animals. But in some ways, if you look at April in the stock market, the S&P 500, I think it, you know, for all the volatility by the end, it was basically at the where it was at the start, right? Like, I'm just thinking out loud here. There's like an element of getting used to uncertainty and just moving on with your life, right? Like, and I think there's, all things remain the same here, I do think it probably leads to just higher sales volume because people go, okay, well, you know, the sky's just continuously falling, so let's get on with our lives. So hopefully that's the case. Well, hopefully things are in the direction.
Yeah. And I think you guys see it firsthand being in the market and, you know, brokers and, you know, seeing the interest in listings that you might have or buyers that you're working with. But I sort of noticed, like, just driving around my neighborhood, I made this comment to my wife that, you know, it's funny that, you know, when the market is super hot, you hardly see any for sale signs in your neighborhood. And now the market is really soft and you see a ton of, it's like people are listing properties, you know, at probably the softest time in the market that we've seen for, you know, close to a decade. But, you know, so I see a ton of for sale signs in my neighborhood in North Van. But I'm also seeing sold stickers popping up on those signs in a pretty, you know, reasonably short period of time. You know, given what you read in the headlines about the real estate market, you would think nothing would be selling. But in fact, there are people in the market that are making buying decisions that, you know, to Jordan's point, they're saying, you know, look, I can't keep my life on hold any longer. You know, we've got to make a decision. And you know, the market's probably as good as it's been to buy something as it's been as long as we can remember.
I feel like I'm supporting Jordan's comment on the market's going to get busier, I think, for the second half. And I think that's kind of for the last few years, we've seen either the years are front-loaded or kind of back-loaded depending on the year. But there seems to be a stretch of real softness and then it picks up a bit. And I think like right now, anecdotally, kind of post-election, I know that was very recent, but I think a lot of people are kind of just waiting on the election more because of just another thing that's to wait for, right? And now that kind of the dust is settling a bit, I'm noticing, at least talking to other brokers, that there seems to be an uptick just even in the last 2 weeks
of
stuff moving. Yeah. And I mean, I was in multiples 3 times in the last 2 weeks on one of our listings and 2 with representing buyers. And I mean, certain areas, certain submarkets are really busy right now. So I support that. I think we're going to have a busier, I don't think it's going to be a crazy market, but I think it's going to be a busier second half this year.
Yeah. And I've heard some of the same, like local developer launched a tower in Poco a couple of weeks ago and apparently did about 100 deals there. Polygon launched a project in Burke Mountain and sold, like, had lineups outside waiting for people to buy, and sold, you know, 30 of the 32 units that they released that first weekend. So to Jordan's point earlier about what our CEO sort of mentioned at the start of the year, it's just look for those green shoots. And I think we're, you know, April was tough, I think, just given the election and everything. But now that that's over, I think we're starting to see a few more of those pop up.
Speaking of green shoots, Anthem just launched the Anthem Homeownership Accelerator Program. Can you talk a little bit about the idea behind it and how it helps people get into the market?
Yeah, so we're just trying to, you know, apply some fertilizer to those green shoots to make them grow a little bit faster. So yeah, you know, it's a recognition that, you know, there are a lot of people that are, you know, would like to get into the market, either to move up from where they're currently at, or, you know, get out of a rental situation and actually own a property, and they're just looking for, or just needing a bit of a prompt or a push to get them into it, whether it's a financial assistance that they need to get them over the hump and get them into a buying position. That was the idea behind this program, is to get people unstuck from that position of, you know, should I buy, shouldn't I buy? You know, they're just needing a reason to buy. So we're helping give them a reason to buy with this homeownership accelerator program. So essentially it's an incentive program that provides buyers, I think the most important part of it is it provides buyers the flexibility to use that incentive in whatever way benefits their situation the most. So, you know, it could be, you know, do they need an extended completion timeline to help them save some more money for the completion of the home? You know, could be a buy down on their mortgage, that kind of thing. So that's where we're just trying to help get people off the fence and take away those barriers to home ownership, if you will. I can read you the marketing blurb.
We'll do that in the intro.
but no, I think that's essentially it. And it's, you know, we're trying to, and it's the, you know, not to make this a commercial about Anthem, but I think we've got some of the best teams in, you know, across the company, whether it's development, you know, the team that Jordan works with, our acquisitions team and our finance team, but our sales and marketing team, I think is one of the best in the business. And they're always sort of trying to get out as far ahead of the market as possible with the various programs that they've brought in over the years. And this is another example of it. And, you know, so if you take, you know, this program and combine it with, you know, whatever incentive program that the government might bring in with respect to GST,
yeah,
or what have you, if you're a first time buyer, and my hope for that GST is that they broaden it and make it applicable to non first time buyers. Cause, you know, if you think of a senior or somebody who's an empty nester and is looking to downsize, you know, they're looking to sell their home and move into a new condo, downsize into a new condo, you get rid of the GST, that sort of helps that equation a little bit. So that's where that's my ad for broadening that GST scope. But if you combine, you know, that hopefully coming soon GST incentive and break with this, it then becomes a pretty substantive savings for our buyers. So I would invite prospective buyers to go and check it out.
And just so I understand, or the listeners understand, it sounds unique in that the incentive is unique to the individual circumstances, if I understand correctly. It's not kind of a one size fits all.
Yeah, exactly.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, that's the unique aspect.
Yeah, of it, that's so interesting.
That's cool.
And if you create an acronym out of it, it's AHA.
like it.
Very good. We do have this segment called the Five Wire, five lighthearted questions that we end every show with. Michael, you've been through them before, but Jordan, your first time. Can you stick around for that?
Of course.
All right.
Absolutely.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Atlin at Clayton Crest, a master plan community in the West Clayton area built by Zentera Developments.
Zentera is an absolute force, Adam. They've been recognized as Multifamily Home Builder of the Year for 10 years in a row and just won again at the Georgies for 2025 Multifamily Home Builder of the Year.
What's really exciting about Atlin is the West Clayton location. You're within walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, giving you that perfect balance of city access while living in a peaceful, family-friendly community in the Fraser Valley.
And if you have kids or are planning to start a family, there's an on-site daycare where residents get first access. This kind of thoughtful planning is why Zentera's projects stand out in the market.
The amenities at Atlin are incredible too, Matt. A rooftop patio with stunning views, fitness center, co-working space, and lounge areas for events. The outdoor space is extensive with two fitness areas, three children's play areas, and multiple spots to relax.
With major investments happening in the SkyTrain and the 72nd Avenue extension, West Clayton is set for explosive growth. This is genuinely one of those opportunities to invest in a community before values skyrocket.
And that's really the key here. This isn't just about finding a beautiful place to live. It's about making a smart investment in your future as the whole area continues to develop.
Pre-sales for Atlin will begin soon. Register today at atlincondos.ca. That's atlincondos.ca.
Excellent. So first question, and we'll do these kind of, we'll start with you, Michael, for this one. One book that you've read recently that you'd recommend.
I'm reading this book called Outlive. You know, I'm starting to push 60. And so I'm looking at ways to not necessarily live longer, but extend my quality of life as long as possible. And that's sort of the whole idea behind this book is, you know, instead of, you know, treating the problems, trying to avoid the problems in the first place with respect to health. So far, so good. I'm about halfway through it. It's pretty interesting.
Peter Attia, he's also got the second best podcast on Spotify, I think. So,
Yeah, he's good.
We're the first, in case everybody misses.
Yes.
We're
the first. Yeah, exactly. Jordan, one book for our listeners.
This sounds cliche and fake, but it's true. I just finished a book called Barbarians at the Gate, which is like a very famous, like it's been around for 20 odd years, maybe longer. Yeah. It's like a business reporting type book on KKR's leveraged buyout of RGR Nabisco, I think in the late 80s. And anyway, just I love any book that talks about big deals and specifically like the characters involved, I really like. So I'd highly recommend it to anyone who's interested in that kind of thing.
You know, I'm blanking on the Canadian guy's name, but he's from Winnipeg and he graduated from the University of Manitoba. That was the only takeaway I remember from that book, but what a story.
Yeah, it's a great story. Yeah.
So it's got everything. What a roller coaster of emotions for you guys last night.
Oh, being yeah.
Winnipeg.
Just unreal.
That was, that was great.
Jordan, maybe question number two, one restaurant in Metro Vancouver that you think more people should know about?
Since having my first kid 7 years ago, I go out way less than I used to. And when I do go out, it's usually to either somewhere family friendly or somewhere I can get into on a last second basis because some time is miraculously freed up. So I don't have a great, I don't know if I have a great answer, but I'll plug one. I live in Deep Cove in North Vancouver. Arms Reach Bistro is there. It's not too fancy, but I think they do a really good job for a good value, nice setting, good food. And again, you're right there on the water in the Cove. So I'll plug them. I like Arms Reach Bistro.
Good choice. Good choice.
Michael?
I don't know if more people should know about it because it's already pretty tough to get a reservation. But I tried finally for the first time Casa Molina over in Mount Pleasant. And so their specialty is paella. And they actually won, I think, a silver award for one of their paellas worldwide. Super authentic. The owner came from Spain, had restaurants there and decided to, you know, sold off his restaurants there and moved over here and kind of got bored and thought he would start this back up as a project. So I was really impressed both with the food service.
Good one.
Nice. What have you been binge watching lately or a movie recommendation? We'll start with you, Michael.
I mean, there's been a few really good ones that I'm sure, you know, people already know about, but I'm going to say Toxic Town was actually really good. And yeah, that's a Netflix one, just about a, you know, mine cleanup gone wrong in a town in the UK back in the 80s.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and it's not a documentary, it's an actual series?
Yeah, it's a series, I think 6 episodes or something, so not too long, not a huge commitment, but it spans, like, you know, probably a good few years. You know, these basically kids that were born with some deformities as a result of the toxicity as they were cleaning up the mine, the dust in the air and that kind of thing. So, and then the gal from White Lotus is also in it. The one, I'm not going to give it away, but the one with the very distinct teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll leave it to everyone's imagination what you're not giving away there.
I didn't want to give away what happened to her.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay.
Just in case somebody hasn't actually watched it yet.
So. Right. And Jordan?
I just finished White Lotus. Enjoyed that along with everyone else in the world. also just finished, which I really enjoyed, was Landman with Billy Bob Thornton. He gives a monologue in like the opening scene of the series. And I was just, it was like the coolest thing ever. Like it's ridiculous, but it's just, it's awesome. I would recommend that show.
Heard good things. Awesome. Okay. Next up, and back to you, Jordan. Favorite band or music you're listening to?
Well, I'm a rap guy. so I'd say my all-time favorite is Jay-Z. But, and I've historically been like a very ignorant, belligerent hater of country. But my wife's been forcing Morgan Wallen on me. And I got to say, I'm liking it. So I'm feeling hypocritical, but satisfied by Morgan Wallen these days.
I feel like we've heard that one on the show. Like yeah. Literally, I think maybe all of the North Shore is really? Going through the same thing, or is it all of Vancouver? I don't know.
It's the real estate industry.
Things take a long time to get over there. It is.
It's real estate does hip hop and country. It's, that's basically what it does. Michael?
I'm going to go back to my 80s roots, and I just went to the AC/DC concert a couple of weeks ago. Took my 24-year-old daughter, and we had the best time. We couldn't wipe the smile off our faces the entire time we were there. So good.
Nice. Good. All right.
And a 7-year-old, it gives me hope.
And a final question. Michael, if you had to start your career over in a completely different industry, what would you choose?
That's a really hard question. Not that I would be any good at it, but I think I'd love to do something in the acting field.
I was going to say, nice. You almost had not the opportunity to enter into the acting field, but when you sold Urban Analytics, you could have pivoted.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
and Jordan?
Same kind of answer, honestly. And same, like, I'm not saying I'd be good at it. It doesn't necessarily need to be acting. And now with Trump saying he's going to tariff movies 100%, I mean, maybe I wouldn't pick this. But something in that business, it just seems exciting. I love storytelling. I love what you can do. Like, so, you know, on a writing crew or maybe acting, just even producing, just putting them together. Something like that would be really cool.
Yeah, just something in the entertainment field.
Yeah, yeah.
Right on. Nice. Well, thanks so much, guys, for coming on the show. We took up more time than we were hoping to take up a lot of time, but we took up more than we were planned to. So thanks for your time. How can people find out more about what you're doing over at Anthem, your projects, and also the Anthem Homeownership Accelerator Program?
Go to anthemproperties.com and you'll find, you know, all the information on all of the assets and projects that we're working on there. And I'm sure you'll, you know, if you subscribe to any of our socials, for Anthem Properties, we do a really good job there. Our digital marketing team does a fabulous job of getting all the information on all our various programs onto there. So would highly recommend, you know, whether it's Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn, check that out.
Yeah. I would agree. Michael, did you tell Alicia we were doing this? Sorry, our head of communications is very proactive. She'll be upset with us if she didn't know about this and then promote it on our LinkedIn. Yeah.
We did. Yes, okay. She is well aware. So,
okay, good.
Yeah. We'll be pushing it out there for sure.
Right on.
Okay, well, thanks. Thanks for taking the time. It was, good to catch up.
Yeah, always nice to see you.
Guys, really appreciate it.
Yeah, keep up the good work. You guys have the best podcast going in the market here. So keep it
Absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Appreciate it. Awesome. Well, have a good day.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Michael Ferreira, Senior Vice President, Finance and Corporate Affairs at Anthem, and Jordan Carlson, President, Anthem Holdings Canada, and Senior Vice President, Investment Group for Anthem Properties at Large.
Always great having, technically Jordan's first time on the program, but great having both those guys on, and fun conversation, even in light
of
some challenges in this market. So,
you know what? Insightful guys, obviously, that's putting it lightly. I do feel like Jordan has a way of turning a phrase that is very funny and kind of cutting in a way that is, it's really entertaining. And just a lot of takeaways, interesting stuff. So glad those guys could join us.
Yeah, and we had to cut out a lot of them making fun of me, which you guys really ganged up on me there for a while. That was, if we release the... behind the scenes, it's me turtling. Well, the three of you make fun of me on that call, but always fun. There was no locker to be shoved in, but I appreciate the effort.
Absolutely. What else do we have before we cut for the day, Adam? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer where you get things like, stats, different types of stats, sales ratios. You can dig into markets, not only markets, submarkets, price bands. Look at, what townhomes at 1.2 to 1.3 are doing in a specific neighborhood. Super granular, super useful information. We also have deal of the month. We have VIP access to pre-sales, the catalog of podcasts we're putting out. There's no reason why you shouldn't be on the LiveWire. And of course, we have tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using private client services, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is the best way to search for real estate in the Lower Mainland. I promise you that. It's an amazing dashboard that you can kind of manage and monitor the market in a meaningful way. And you can get your free account over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click buy with us and set up your own free account today.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to talk about that or anything else, you can try me at any time, 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line. Speaking of which, Clint Murphy's coming back on the show.
Can't wait.
info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Clint's always living his best life. Well, have a great week. And back next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio.
Subscribe today.